It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 27. And last week we ranged all over the world. This week we're going to stay mostly in Scotland and other parts of the United Kingdom as well. Of course, we could talk about Brexit because it's been another momentous week, although nothing has really been decided. The British Parliament has come to a decision to go back to the European Union, ask them to remove the Northern Irish backstop. The EU won't do that right up to the wire. Who knows what's going to happen? So we'll leave that for another time. Then there's the fact that it's been up to 50 degrees in Australia, and today I was hearing that it was minus 29 degrees in Chicago. But we'll leave that as well. Instead, I want to focus on a subject. The first part of this podcast will be on a subject that is enormously important to all of us, and that is what our children are being taught. Now in Scotland, the Scottish Government are putting out a new consent programme. This is tied in with TIE, Time for Inclusive Education, which is primarily designed to promote the LGBTQIA whatever agenda in schools. It's designed for indoctrination. And listen to the BBC on this agenda, which is meant to be about consent and teaching children about Me Too. Just take a guess. As soon as they said they were going to interview a pupil, I knew that this would be the case. Listen to this.
Relationships, but it's just one recommendation from a wide-ranging review. And I was at Queen Anne's High School in Dunfermline earlier today, where the Education Secretary John Swinney was meeting staff and pupils. And among the pupils was 17-year-old transgender pupil Arthur. And he told me that schools need to take a more inclusive, need to be more inclusive towards people who are on the same journey as him.
I think there is more work to be done, but I also believe that there will always be work to be done because identities are always changing, people are always going to change how they want to be viewed and what people want to call them as well. I think there's a lot of work to do in classrooms still, but I know that in a couple of weeks we are having an in-service day and I will be there to help educate our teachers on different ways that they can use gender-neutral language and be more inclusive within the classrooms.
So what do teachers see as the challenges?
I just knew that when they started it would be a transgender. 0.001% of the population are transgender, but that's what all this issue is about. And so we have a girl coming on who wants to be a boy, and this is the thing that astounded me about that interview. There will be an in-service day in which I will educate our teachers. So now we have the pupils educating the teachers. Later on, John Swinney said that this was going to be designed and delivered by pupils, new courses in social media, and that parents will go along with this because parents will want their young people to have access to high-quality personal and social knowledge, which will give them all that they need to equip them for life. This is not going to equip our children for life. This is going to do enormous harm. Now, how do you react to this? As it happened, there was a phone-in program. And I'm going to let you listen to a fairly extensive phone-in that I phoned in. And it's interesting. You listen to this, but let me just tell you that after it, there was a woman came on and they told me to hang on. And I think they expected this woman to disagree with me. But they actually couldn't find someone to disagree with me, so they didn't let me speak again. But here is what I had to say on BBC Scotland last week.
8852 95 00. David is in Dundee this morning. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Morning. What do you think?
Well, I thought your first caller or discussion about pornography was absolutely spot on because in my own city, the last statistics I saw, about 40% of 10-year-old boys had seen like gross, hardcore pornography, and those are images that will never leave their minds. But I think that my problem here is we're talking about teaching consent to children who can't consent. By definition, paedophilia is wrong because children can't consent. So when we're teaching them about consent, what are we actually teaching them and what are we actually saying to them? And I think part of this is the chickens are coming home to roost in our society because we're giving children confused messages about sex and sexuality and everything else because we ourselves are confused. So they do see the images. And also there's a problem in teaching that sex is what sex actually is, that it's an appetite just to be indulged. So it seems to me that the whole message is incredibly confused. And I don't think just having lessons at school, I think it's part of the answer, but I don't think it goes anywhere near dealing with the major issues.
Is it not quite simple, as the mum we spoke to just before?
Let's move on. At the end of that programme, or in fact, not even at the end, just after I'd finished my call, they came through breaking news that Alex Salmond, who was the SNP First Minister of Scotland, and just a significant leading figure. He's actually been in my church as well. He was there for Gordon Wilson's funeral. But that he'd been charged with 14 charges, serious charges of sexual assault, two of attempted rape. Now, there's been a kind of news blackout since then, as there should be, because we cannot discuss it, because it's court proceedings. But we can say that obviously this is incredibly serious, both for Mr. Salmond and for those who are bringing the accusations. It really is quite astounding, and it does have political implications as well. Because although the SNP are saying this has nothing to do with the independence campaign, I think it will have a great deal to do. So watch this space and just pray for our poor country. And sticking with Scotland and also sticking with my own city, Dundee, it really is just so desperate. Some of the things that are going on, especially with drugs, and BBC Radio 4 had a programme about the number of drugs deaths increasing in Scotland. And of course, when they went to the clip, it was Dundee. And last year, 100 people died of drugs. Now, the Scottish Government is saying that that is largely older drug addicts who are coming towards the end of their life. But the drugs workers here are saying, no, it's the majority are people between 18 and 25. The devastation that drugs cause. Now, again, our government seems to have no answer to it because rehabilitation costs such a lot. They're not going to put in for that. The basic thing has been to give methadone, which is fine for a while. It helps people cope. But as a lifetime thing, I don't think that it works. And then clean needles and so on. And again, you can say that that's fine for a while, but it's the root causes of why people do this. And it's just so desperately sad and so desperately despairing. And that's why I want to mention my son, Andrew, actually, as he's now known, Andy, who's come back to Dundee and is doing a church plant in Charleston. Now, it's not just for drug addicts, but there are a lot of drug addicts in this area of Dundee called Charleston. And what he's doing there is presenting people with the gospel. People need the good news. They don't just need clean needles. I mean, here's the interesting thing. When the shop that they were doing was being refurbished, that they used as their base throughout the week and have meetings on Sunday there as well, people were coming in, and this tells you a lot about British society. They said, is this going to be a mosque or a needle exchange? Well, people don't need a needle exchange as much as they need the gospel. Please do pray for that work. Let's stay with Dundee and let's go back to that phone-in programme where there was a youth worker, a church youth worker from Dundee talking about this issue of consent. And it struck me, a lot of what he said was good, but the one thing that bothered me almost more than anything, and profoundly disturbed me actually, was he talked about the tea consent video. Now, that's a video which has been produced to display the idea that giving consent is a bit like getting a cup of tea, consent for sex.
If someone said yes to tea around your house last Saturday, That doesn't mean they want you to make them tea all the time. They don't want you to come around to their place unexpectedly and make them tea and force them to drink it, going, but you wanted tea last week. Or to wake up to find you pouring tea down their throat, going, but you wanted tea last night. But if you can understand how completely ludicrous it is to force people to have tea when they don't want tea, and you're able to understand when people don't want tea, then how hard is it to understand it when it comes to sex? Whether it's tea or sex, consent is everything. And on that note, I'm going to go make myself a cup of tea.
Now, what's wrong with that? I'll tell you what I think is really wrong with it. It reduces sex to a commodity. And that, for me, I understand the message, but I think it's going along with the world's agenda. What we need to teach children is that sex is special. We don't need to be teaching them, oh, it's all about your consent, and it's all about your appetites, and it's all about what you feel like. That, I'm afraid, is not going to be enough. Now let's come back to this idea of hate crime. And again, it's all, again, of course, tied in with transgender. There is a most extraordinary story about a man called Harry Miller. Now, Mr. Miller owns his own company, but he was phoned up by the police and told that he may lose his job with the company because he had retweeted, not he himself had written something, but he had retweeted something about transgender. And he asked if he'd committed a crime, and he was told no. He then asked the officer concerned not to refer to the complainant as the victim, because as there was no crime, there was no victim. And the police went on to say, this policeman, that he had 30 tweets by him, and he, Harry Miller then asked the policeman, why are you wasting time on a non-crime? And then he says, this is where it gets incredibly sinister. The cop told me that he needed to speak with me because even though I'd committed no crime whatsoever, he needed, and I quote, to check my thinking. Seriously, honestly, finally he lectured me. He said, sometimes a woman's brain grows a man's body in the womb, and that is what transgender is. You can imagine my response. Lastly, he told me that I needed to watch my words more carefully, or I was at risk of being sacked by the company for hate speech. Now, there's a big fuss about this, and the police, instead of admitting that they were wrong, have really doubled down. They've said that hate incidents are those which are perceived, and we've known this before, are perceived by the victim to be hateful. They said this isn't a case of the police controlling people's thoughts. The actions taken by the individual and his comments made around transgender cause someone distress. We take all reports of hate-related incidents seriously and aim to ensure they do not escalate into anything further. We will always take reports of this nature seriously and, as with this case, take proportionate action. Here's the thing. Remember when I reported the police to themselves for hate crime because I saw a poster which upset me and hurt me and caused me distress because it suggested that because I was a Christian, I would be full of hate? Remember that? Did they take that seriously? No, not at all. The police are only taking certain things seriously, and it's tied in back again with thought control and with the social agendas, particularly the sexual agendas of the day. Last week we mentioned New York State and abortion. There are apparently 7 other United States that allow abortion up to full term. I was listening to one politician from Virginia saying, testifying, that her bill to allow this would mean that a woman could be in labor and decide to change her mind and her baby could be killed. It's almost impossible to describe the barbarism that's involved in this. But almost as chilling is the fact that Governor Cuomo ordered that the Empire State Building be lit up in pink in order to celebrate this. It's just breathtaking. Now, I hope she'll forgive me if she ever hears this for pronouncing her name, but Oblanuju Ekoshia, who writes some great stuff, Oblanuju, E-K-E-E-O-C-H-A. Just, I would suggest you Google her or follow her on Twitter or something. She replied to Kimo, "You lit the spire to celebrate the abortion of the unborn in the same location where I went to weep over the memory of 11 unborn children, over the memorial of 11 unborn children killed by terrorists. You memorialize the lives of those killed by terrorists, but turn around to celebrate those killed by abortionists." Absolutely spot on and absolutely chilling that people celebrate this kind of barbarity. Meanwhile, Facebook are back up to their old tricks again. There's a film being made about the Roe v. Wade case, and Facebook are refusing to allow advertising on it. Why? Because it's controversial. You watch as the tech giants, Google, Facebook, and others, more and more become our censors. There's another story about Google who had employees complaining about the use of the word family in family-friendly advertising because it was discriminatory towards homosexuals. Yep. Of course, the press doesn't have the same reservations when it comes to attacking Christianity or Christian schools. There's an amusing story that comes from the New York Times where Dan Levin, who tweeted, "I'm a New York Times reporter writing about hashtag expose Christian schools." Now, expose Christian schools is a hashtag created by Chris Strope, a self-described ex-evangelical. And he did that in terms of Karen Pence, the vice president's wife, who's returned to her old job teaching art at a Christian school in Virginia. Mr. Levine denied that he was just seeking negative stories, so why you would have a hashtag expose Christian schools to teach positive stories, no one really seems to know. Anyway, it's enormously backfired because he's received so many messages from people who had really good experience at Christian schools. What you reap, you sow. And then finally, let's go to the cinema and, well, I'm going to say don't go to the cinema to see this particular film, Mary, Queen of Scots. It's part of the new genre, I will call it, of woke historical film drama.
England does not look so different from Scotland.
Aye, they are sisters.
Queen Elizabeth, your cousin Mary has returned to take up her throne in Scotland.
The Queen!
My dear cousin Elizabeth, I hope we might meet in person, that I might embrace you. But ruling side by side, we must do so in harmony, not through a treaty drafted by men lesser than ourselves.
My dear cousin, let our nations cherish each other as we would, two kingdoms united.
The history is worse than Mel Gibson's Braveheart in terms of its historical accuracy. But what it is it tells you about the values of our culture. So here, of course, it's two brave women taking on all these nasty patriarchal men. John Knox, of course, is a caricature of an evil religious bigot. There's so much of be whoever you wish to be. It's, you know, almost beyond caricature. It's also, of course, to fill the diversity quota, got a significant number of black actors in. And again, that's not a problem, except in 16th century Scotland and England. It's highly unlikely that of probably around 300 black people in the United Kingdom, it appears most of them were in the courts of either Elizabeth or Mary. You know, there are so many other issues. Anyway, I'm going to love you and leave you. Again, if you wish to support this podcast, please do so on the Podbean Patreon fundraiser. That would be really appreciated. And if you've got news from any of your countries, and a lot of people from different countries listen to this, then please do pass it on, because the Christian Network is just absolutely marvelous in terms of providing information. But I'm going to leave you with a quote from a book I'm reading just now called Our Culture, What's Left of It, by Theodore Dalrymple. Utterly brilliant. He's just a great essayist. And he's got an essay called The Goddess of Domestic Tribulations, which is about the death of Princess Diana. And this is what he says at one point. In the orgy of sentimentality into which much of the country sank after Diana's death, and which reminds me of the hot bath into which I gratefully sink after a hard day at the hospital, one thing has become evident. That the British, under the influence of the medium of mass communication, which demand that everyone wear his emotion or pseudo-emotion on his sleeve, have lost their only admirable qualities, stoicism, self-deprecation, and a sense of irony, and have gained only those worthy of contempt. They have exchanged depth for shallowness, and have thought they have got the better of the bargain. They are like people who imagine that the answer to constipation is diarrhea. Brilliant. See you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt.